Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Going for Two, the official podcast of the Extra Points newsletter. I am your intrepid host, Matt Brown. I am the publisher of said newsletter, which you can find in its beautiful new shiny home at extrapointsmb.com. I am joined today, as always, by my co-host, Brian Fisher, on another beautiful day here. Brian, it looks like the off-season content gods have blessed us.
They absolutely have. And it's fascinating because I feel like it's supposed to be slowing down the news and everything that's happening. But this last week of April here, everything is picking up. We got the NFL draft around the corner, the developments across the pond that we kind of touched on last week with regards to that Super League that are still having some fallout there. We got media rights negotiations going on. It's busy, and it really kind of lends into the topic that we're going to discuss today, which is college football playoff expansion,
which is normally something that we would dig into when it's June or when it's July and there's nothing else really going on. And so we fire up a couple of potential proposals about expansion and maybe we talk about some Mount Rushmores or something. And you and I, we've both been in the content minds for a long time, but we're talking about this now, not just because we're waiting for some FOIAs to come back and we don't have anything else to talk about, but because there's been an honest to goodness press release. And reading between the lines of said press release, I think we would both agree that it would be reasonable to think that expansion is going to come on some level sooner rather than later, rather than just theoretically engaged, right?
Yeah, I mean, I asked somebody, you know, a couple weeks ago about this management committee meeting, and you know, it was kind of the usuals. There will, you know, we'll put out a release, and it'll be pretty standard, and you know, there won't be much to it. But I think it really did turn everybody's heads a little bit to see that they had not only kind of convened a subcommittee to look at expansion, but that they very publicly put it out there. And I think that was really what, whether you're an insider in college football or whether you're just somebody following along who wants 8 or 10 teams or 16 teams or whatever it might be, the fact that they made that announcement that, hey, we're at least considering it, not only sets it kind of in stone that there will be college football expansion on the horizon, but really was, I think, a bit of a bat signal to the entire sport. And so I think that's what we're going to dive into a little bit deeper today.
Yeah, one of the things that really kind of stuck out to me from reading this, trying to separate the kind of Bill Hancock-ies from anything that is concrete, is that they were extremely and weirdly specific about not just what the potential bracket options were, but how many possibilities for change, right? Like to come out and say, we've reviewed 63 different possibilities. That's a very funny number. That is a very funny and very specific number. Because, you know, if you're just looking at, you look at, okay, 6, 8, 10, 12, 16, how many different permutations of those options can you possibly get to 63? Now, I'm sure that some of those are campus sites and some of those are neutral sites and some of those have a buy here. There's ways to do it. But it's not we considered 4 or 8 or 12 options. We considered 63, which is you know, not quite 64. It's not quite any other, you know, funny number. But clearly, there's a whole lot of PDFs sitting on somebody's computer right now and a whole lot of garbage in the garbage can, whiteboarding a couple of these ideas. So that's not something that you mention just idly out of hand. The people on this board are not in the message board speculation business, as I understand it.
No, absolutely not. And I think it is important to keep in mind is that the people in college athletics, and especially the people attached to this project in terms of the college football playoff, they do not do things kind of willy-nilly. This was, you know, not only included in that press release to send a message, but you know, I think it was notable to kind of show that there's been some progress because, you know, I've been, you know, usually at the national title game, the group of managers, the board of managers and the management committee will have their meetings usually before the national title game. And they'll talk to the press a little bit. I've been in those gaggles and it's always, well, we've discussed it a little bit, but there's nothing really on the horizon. You know, there was not any detailed talk about it. Now we've had detailed talk about it. And so I think that is the kind of eye opener. And I think it's important to keep in mind that the subcommittee that was looking at all these scenarios and playoff expansion, you know, Bob Bowlsby, the Big 12 commissioner, a league that has been left out of the playoff before, and along with the Pac-12, has kind of been on the outside looking in terms of securing those spots a couple times. So I think that's notable, number one. Craig Thompson, for certainly the Mountain West commissioner who's been there, involved in these discussions, certainly years back when Boise was on the kind of BCS buster scope. You know, I think that that's notable to have him on there. And Greg Sankey, who might be the most powerful name out there in, among the commissioners in terms of his sway and what he brings to the table, along with Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame AD. So some heavy hitters, you know, really looking detailed at a lot of these proposals. And I think that is something kind of keep in the back of your mind as well, that this is not just a committee thrown together and we're going to look at, these various scenarios. We're studying it hard, and we've got some pretty heavy hitters that are looking at it as well.
So this, you might know this a little bit better than I would. Trying to understand the why and the timeline from this happening right now, because if I'm looking at the college football playoff, you would think the conventional wisdom is if we expand this, whether that's to 6, 8, some other, whatever number, however we decide to do it, it's going to increase the value of the television contract. It will renegotiate it. It'll come up with a new length. You'll have new inventory. Ratings will probably go up for some of these. Everyone will get more money. Now, what's the thing that almost everybody needs right now is more money, because COVID nuked almost everyone's budget. That blew up their cash reserves. They weren't able to sell very many tickets for an entire year. Their expenses went up. So you would think that there would be a very powerful short-term incentive to get this done quickly. But if I'm reading this press release correctly, they're like, look, we're studying the issue. We've still got 4 more years on this deal. Nothing is imminent. Shouldn't there be an incentive to make that imminent thing happen before the next 4 years, given that people would like to shore up their finances in the short term?
Yeah, I mean, if you're an athletic director, you're pushing for this to expand right away. And even going back last year, you know, you kind of heard the Larry Scott talk about, hey, let's go to an expanded playoff, not just for the additional revenue it would bring in this year, and the issues of equality and fairness in such a pandemic ravaged season. But maybe a lot of our schools do need this money. And there was some pushback to that. Obviously, we just had the regular four-teamer like normal. And I think there's, the presidents that are really kind of in charge of this do take much more of a longer-term view. And so they are the ones that say, yeah, as much as we do need that money in the short term, I think the entire expansion playoff talk is really much more of a red flag, or I guess, to kind of run up the flagpole to the ESPNs of the world, the Foxes of the world, CBS, Turner. Everybody that is involved in those media rights negotiations, there's a lot of them coming up in the next couple of years. And I think this is the way of the College Football Playoff Committee and everybody involved in the College Football Playoff raising their hand and saying, hey, we're going to be at the table too. Whether it's at the end of that 12-year deal, we've got 5 years left on the original deal, but they are kind of saying, hey, we're in line to get a big increase too. So when you're negotiating with the Premier League coming up, if you're NBC, whether you're CBS and Turner, who are on the rights negotiation tables for a number of leagues, the NBA is out there. There are a lot of things coming up in the next 5 to 10 years, and the College Football Playoff. I think the reason they kind of put this release out there was saying, hey, don't forget about us, because we're coming to market in a couple of years as well. Probably going to start that negotiation period in terms of this is what it's going to look like. This is how many games. That's probably going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years. So I think this was a very strategic move, ultimately, to put this out there, because the College Football Playoff and those involved, as much as they would like it to happen right away, they also know that this is going to take a few years to kind of get in place. And they want to make sure that whether it's ESPN, whether it's Fox, whether it's a new partner out there, we already talked about Amazon last week, they want to make sure everybody is aware of what's coming down the pipe. And that is an expanded College Football Playoff.
That's a good point to remind people that, especially right now, we have a finite amount of money from the major ESPNs of the world for broadcast rights. Like, even like, I think, like literally as we're talking right now, there's news about the NHL and it looks like Fox and ESPN are Turner are going to pick up some of those rights. They're going to move away from NBC. ESPN's already sunk in a bunch of other money into other places. And I think it would be a massive shock if they decided to not continue to own the College Football Playoff, given that you wouldn't spend all this money on the SEC and this supporting infrastructure to college athletics if you didn't intend to maintain that bid. But they're also going to, right, there's going to be 3-4 other major conferences going to market then too. And then potentially over the latter end of that playoff deal, some of these G5 places. And so you do have to kind of figure out, if we throw all of the money in the playoff, will there still be money left for Oregon State's rights? Will there still be money left over for Conference USA? And they're all talking about it that, I mean, that it's not to say that that anyone's going to get screwed necessarily, but that does maybe make the timing angle a little bit more complicated, given how important those individual rights are for all the teams that are never, ever going to make even a 16-team playoff.
Well, I almost think this announcement kind of enhances those rights. You know, we've talked about, you know, the Pac-12 and how really the air kind of gets sucked out of their season once one of their big teams loses a game, and how they are kind of on the outside of looking in terms of that playoff discussion. Well, now if you're guaranteed a spot in some sort of expanded field, or you have a team that's maybe chasing a bye if they incorporate that in the new structure, there's going to be a lot more fans interested out of the Pac-12 in this product. And so whether you're ESPN or whether you're Fox or, you know, somebody else out there, maybe that makes those regular season games mean a lot more. And that means more eyeballs and more attention and potentially more money. And with the Big Ten coming up, the Big 12, the Pac-12, maybe this is also a way where they can also increase their rights, not just beyond what is the kind of current structure of everything. But, you know, you say, look, in addition to, you know, the normal increases that we're going to get by just kind of going to market at this time, look, our rights are going to be a lot more valuable because it's going to feed into this college football playoff ecosystem, where a lot more teams are interested, a lot more teams are in the running. And yeah, you know, it's going to be, you know, if you're an Arizona fan and you have a 9-3, 10-2 type of season, and you're kind of still in the discussion of the playoff game, those games are going to mean a lot more late in the season in November than they do currently right now. And so I think that's one way where, in addition to increasing the rights for this playoff, this is also a way for some of the commissioners to kind of drive a little bit more value, I think, in terms of what's coming up with their own negotiations.
If you are the Pac-12, I think that is unquestionably true. And it's a major reason why one of the voices pushing for that expansion even before this announcement was Larry Scott. We could talk about whether he was doing a good enough job or being as forceful there. And I couldn't agree more. One of the criticisms that you're going to hear and read the most, I think, over the next couple of months as people unpack these various proposals is that this diminishes the value of the regular season. Well, you and I and God and Dave Brown, who runs Gridiron, and everybody else knows that most of the regular season games don't matter at all right now anyway. A big part of that is you're right. Like, if you're a casual fan, you might not have watched a Pac-12 game in like 2 years, because those teams have simply not been nationally relevant. And by September 18th, in some years you can write off, you know, a third of the country. If you're a G5 team, you can write off those games basically immediately. By the expanding field, you are then increasing the number of highly relevant games for more teams and potentially making them more attractive for television packages. I think that would also be true for fans. For every every Notre Dame Clemson game like we saw last year, which in the end didn't really matter all that much for the playoff, and while that game may face some diminished attention, I could think of three or four other games that would likely see more. I think that's a good point. I'm just curious here, from your perspective as a fan or someone who enjoys this product, do you have a number that you would prefer to see? Is it 8? Is it 12? Is it 128? What do you think? Not what the committee or these managers or the whatever's will actually end up doing. What would you like to see if somebody gave you the marker and the whiteboard?
Well, 128, I think that was Mike Leach's proposal. So I'm going to push that to a side. But I think
suck it, Old Dominion. missed the 128 field.
Listen, before we really kind of got down the road with 8, I always thought 6 was a great number because it did incentivize those top teams to kind of get the bye and get that extra rest and be prepared. You would obviously, if you're one of those lower seeds, you have to go through another game, another round. And so that makes it even more important that you get one of those top teams to really incentivize winning during the regular season. So I do like 6. I think 8 is obviously the number everybody's going to land on. I think ultimately when you talk with athletic directors or even college presidents on down, that kind of is where everybody is kind of looking at. Could it be 16? Could it go beyond that? Sure. But I think from a games perspective, 8 makes a lot of sense. You got the Power Five. Everybody gets an auto bid. You have room there for the Group of Five. You have others that maybe they lose the wrong game and they don't end up winning their division, so they're not playing for a title. They can still get in there and get into that tournament. What I always think is going to be interesting is with this playoff structure, Bill Hancock, whatever committee chairman is speaking on ESPN on the Tuesday shows, everybody talks about this being the four best teams. I am very curious to see with this discussion whether that conversation is going to change a little bit, whether it's going to be for the four most deserving teams or the eight most deserving teams, whether it's going to be, we want auto bids, or is it just going to be the best eight teams in the country? Because I think if you're one of these Group of Five leagues, you're absolutely pushing back against the notion that it's just going to be the eight best teams in the country. As much as you want to really determine a national college football champion on the field, at the same time, you want some access to this tournament. And I think it would be good, better for the sport if, kind of getting back to what we were talking about earlier, the interest in other parts of the country, if you can be not only win your conference and to get into things, but win those big time games to get into that discussion. I think that's going to be huge. I think it's going to be interesting. I think eight teams is where we're headed. It makes a lot of sense. I think that's ultimately going to be a good product on the field, but I think it's going to be interesting to see also, what is the discussion like? Is it going to be the eight best teams, or are we going to start to talk about the Power Five getting those auto bids, and then where do we kind of go from here?
It's funny you mentioned that, because I have spent a lot of the last 2 weeks reading a bunch of history books on the very early NCAA basketball tournaments. Part of that is because I've been covering college football for a long time. I've written about college football history. I feel like I know the broad strokes of the history of that sport, but I didn't really grow up in a college basketball market or family, and that wasn't culturally relevant to me. So I didn't learn about a lot of things that were happening in the 30s and 40s until now. And this debate over access, as I understand it, all the way up until like the mid 50s was a major sticking point for smaller schools, particularly HBCUs, because prior to integration, the NCAA basically told them, well, you're not going to get good enough to get in the tournament unless you play ACC teams, to which they legally were not allowed to play. And then so really great HBCUs were not in the tournament. And then when they asked for special access, they were rebuffed. And I got to the point that a lot of schools simply just left the NCAA and went to participate in NAIA events. And this was a major organizational sticking point that could have really destabilized the entire membership of the organization until they finally allowed auto bids. I'm not necessarily saying that that's happening here, but if we had a world where this expanded and there wasn't some kind of dedicated access for a G5 team, at that point, you have to wonder, is it worth the $2 million and the prestige of being associated with some of these bigger brands when it's very clear that you're not going to have access? It would really shock me if there wasn't some kind of automatic mechanism to diffuse some of those criticisms, which are not just from the Mike Orescos and from the jilted athletic directors of the world, but potentially from lawmakers. This was something that Orrin Hatch used to complain about this back when he was a senator in Utah, when the Utes and the Cougars were both really good, and before either of them were in power conversations. And you have people in Idaho who have raised these concerns before. For me, as a human, as a fan, I think eight's great. I've seen a couple of proposals for 12, which gets you that same buy situation, and I think I would enjoy that as well. More than that would probably become a little bit too logistically onerous. But I would suspect if we start going down the road where we go to eight or less than eight, and there's not a dedicated access point for a G5 team, then you have to start looking at some other alternatives. Because if it's not going to happen now, when's it ever going to happen?
You're absolutely right. And I think it's also, look, the FCS playoffs are going on right now. So I think there's a big difference between the two levels. But you do feel like there's definitely more of a chance for some of those lower seeded teams to win the FCS playoffs. I don't necessarily think that's the case in college football. I've gone through the mock selection committee and done all those exercises. And when you go back through the years, there's really only a handful of teams that you can say those are true, legitimate national title contenders. But at the same time, I think from an access perspective, certainly from a fairness perspective, to be able to give those teams a chance is going to be huge. And maybe there are upsets that happen. At the same time, I also look at the fact of the matter is you mentioned those threats over that access, whether it's politicians, whether it's schools. I'm just going to be really interested to see how everybody start to work together on this, because I think the pandemic frayed a few nerves, certainly with the decision to kind of come back and play. And this might be a good rebuilding exercise for everybody to kind of learn to trust each other again, whether that's, small school presidents of MAC institutions that desperately need a bit of a cash infusion beyond what the current college football playoff is paying out to them. Whether that's the Alabamas and the Ohio States of the world that know that this is also an opportunity for them, much like we've kind of seen with the Super League last week in Europe. If they know that they are always going to have really a good shot at not only winning their conference, but getting into this playoff and the riches that come with it from not only a brand perspective, but from an on-field trophy perspective as well, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how everybody kind of works together and kind of coalesces into this is the right model, not just for us, but the sport overall as well.
I hadn't even really considered that. The interpersonal relationship angle of these conversations. And you're absolutely right that a lot of those, not just conference to conference, but president to commissioner and conference central office to member institutions, a lot of those relationships were nuked over the last 9 months and are only just now starting to be rebuilt. And I think that's a decent segue into perhaps a less discussed potential ramification for playoff expansion, right? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to be able to figure out that if you expand this playoff, that you're going to open up a lot of opportunities for, say, the Pac-12 or Ohio State, the Big Ten teams not named Ohio State, or Big 12 teams not named Texas or Oklahoma. And you could see some value there. But there's also potentially significant value for institutions that are unlikely to ever sniff even a 16-team playoff over the next decade, because if there's a lot more money coming from this television contract, well, that means that even if the percentage is still relatively low, in absolute dollars, more money is going to be shared than with Conference USA and the Sun Belt and some smaller MAC schools, for where every $100,000 absolutely counts. One of the things that I've been hearing while talking to administrators affiliated with WAC schools, with ASUN schools, and with other FCS institutions that are considering a jump to the FBS level over the next decade, in order to make that calculation, what I'm hearing is we need to know about how much money is going to, could potentially be distributed from the college football playoff to us. And right now, as I understand it, nobody seems to really know. No one seems to absolutely know if the new G5 conference starts up in the next 3 years. Are they entitled to a share of this money? What's the mechanism to determine how they get it? Who makes that decision? I'm hearing that that's not really clear, but that's a pretty big component here. If the playoff expands, and that means that if the WAC decides to move up, or a portion of the WAC decides to move up, and they are eligible for a share comparable to the Sun Belt, that's going to be a significant carrot for a WAC school to potentially make that adjustment. And if it turns out that they can't, or they would get a secondary share, that's going to make it less likely. Like what I'm hearing now, and this jives, I think, with my own understanding of the accounting, is that any school right now that's saying, by God, we will definitely be an FBS institution in the next 6 years, it's full crap. They're saying that for recruiting, and they're saying that to look good in front of other administrators, but without knowing really concrete answers about what's happening with future playoff revenue distributions, nobody can really say that for sure, because you don't have the money to say we're going to do this, come $4 million check or not,
Yeah, and I think it's important to kind of go back for maybe those who don't understand some of the machinations of the college football playoff itself. That $475-500 million, whatever it is per year that ESPN is essentially paying the playoff, that filters all down to a whole number of not only schools, but really levels and kind of the football pyramid, if you will. Notre Dame, they get a cut. The conferences, the Power Five conferences, they get obviously a huge share. You're talking about $60 plus million. I think ultimately ultimately at the end of the contract, it'll be closer to 75 per Power Five conference. No matter what happens with who's selected and all that, they're getting that $75 million. That very similar to kind of how it was back in the day with the BCS. There's also a big payout to the Group of Five conferences that's split. There's even a performance component to that, I'm pretty sure, in terms of, you know, if you make the Group of Five bid a number of times, you get, you know, extra. And so there's that. There's certainly bonuses if you get into the playoff, if you get into a New Year's Six game. There's travel costs associated that the college football playoff is paying out to these schools. So that's kind of taken care of. Even independent schools, you know, there's a small sliver. It's only a couple million dollars, but that's getting distributed as well to some of the independent schools. And I think it even filters down to where they are giving some money. I don't know how much, but it's not a lot to like even the FCS and even lower levels. It's you know, virtually nothing in the grand scheme of things, but it is something. So I think that thing could increase. And so that's when you're talking about, you know, potentially another FBS league. You know, number one, they don't have a seat at the table right now. You know, the board of managers, which are the presidents that kind of run and make the big decisions with the playoff. There's 11 of them. There's one for each FBS conference right now, plus Notre Dame. In terms of Father John Jenkins is also a member of that. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. Will they let another member kind of join that way if the WAC, as you mentioned, or somebody else kind of express interest, or will they simply say, you know what, we'll give you an increased share in terms of that payout, and maybe it's a couple million dollars a year, but no, we're not including you at the table. I think that's still kind of to be determined, and it'll be interesting to see how their kind of conference peers, you know, around the NCAA kind of look at this equation and what is going on in the grand scheme of things, and whether they want more money to kind of filter down to that. So I think it's up for debate. It's certainly going to be an interesting question, because it's not just how much are ESPN, Fox, whatever going to pay, how that money gets distributed in this new expansion is going to be, I think, a big source of debate. Especially when you talk about those Group of Five schools.
Yeah, and even beyond. I want to talk about some of the other governance-related components to potentially changing this playoff or bringing in a new playoff contract. But before I do, because we're all talking about money, let me take a step aside and quickly talk about money for us, thanks to our sponsors. See that? That's why I'm a serious professional, because of segues like that. You're welcome, Proper Good. Proper Good makes some of the tastiest and healthiest zero prep meals that you could want. They're made with ultra clean. And I don't mean that just hygienically. I mean, that also means that you're not having as many ingredients that have 40 characters and 6 hyphens and no vowels in them. You're not going to find as many of those ingredients. There's not any added sugar. And they're ready to eat in just 90 seconds. I can tell you as a young father with a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, that food that can be cooked in under 5 minutes has become near the base of our family food pyramid. It is even now with our schedules being completely blown up, that's critical. But Proper Good's food is healthier for you than whatever kind of like mashed up chicken nugget body part whatever's I'm buying here from Tony's and Jewel. This is food that can be plant-based, it could be keto, it could be gluten-free, it could be dairy-free. It's good for you. They've got all kinds of different healthy lunches and dinner options available for you. You can grab yours at eatpropergood.com. New customers, I believe, get 10% off their first order. This podcast is also, as you probably are aware, a product of the Extra Points newsletter, which was just relaunched. We're recording this here on Monday 26th. That's the first day of Extra Points' new landing page here on Ghost. We have the beautiful new FOIA directory. We have links to merch. It's going to be much easier to listen and download to this podcast. If you want to continue to support what we're doing here on this podcast and everything that's happening on Extra Points, which includes 4 newsletters a week, digging into all of this off-the-field stuff, whether that's changes in name, image, and likeness legislation, whether that's explaining what the heck an esport is, whether that's you understanding the dueling reports about whether Hartford should drop to Division I or Division III and what that means for your favorite low major. That's all the stuff that is exactly in the Extra Points wheelhouse. You can go grab a paid subscription right now. The discount code is actually not working this week, but it's going to be restored very soon. That discount code is GOFOR2. Get you 20% off a paid subscription. Brian, you were alluding to this here earlier, that this is setting up for a potential big fight, not just about the raw numbers, but how the numbers are then distributed and who actually gets to control this damn thing. Right now, because of this is set up through conference leaders being part of these board of managers, right? That means if you're a program like BYU, which actually has, I think, relatively significant brand power within the sport, you don't have anybody advocating for you vis-a-vis the college football playoff, which actually became kind of a big deal, I think, over the last season. If you're Army or if you're Liberty could very well be a preseason top 25 team and could, you know, be in the conversation to win 9-10 games and in an 8-team playoff, if they're competing at this level, would be in that conversation potentially for an 8 spot. There's nobody advocating for them. So I think it's worth wondering here. Yeah. Are you going to change who's actually going to be in the room? Are you going to accommodate independents? Are you going to accommodate potential other leagues? I could think of close to a dozen FCS institutions that could conceivably want to compete at the FBS level in the next decade. And do you use this as an impetus to potentially split the entire operation away from the rest of the NCAA? Like the Knight Commission had proposed, and you find other university presidents that say, we don't want to kick everybody out of the NCAA, but if the NCAA doesn't get any of the money from college football and we have to still pay for the expenses and the administration and the scandal, why should we? Maybe the college football playoff board of directors just ends up creating the College Football Association and puts this whole thing over there and Indianapolis gets out of the business altogether. I don't think that that's likely, but I don't think that the possibility of that happening is zero.
It's funny because I think you look at the crossover between that, and I honestly, you know, there's some, you know, I don't think that, you know, Greg Sankey, as involved in NCAA matters as he is going to say, this is the impetus that we need to kind of break away from a structure that I spent years and years and years and years involved in. And I think that's the same at the presidential level. I don't think this is any impetus to kind of further that breakaway as much as the Knight Commission would like that separation of football and the rest of church and state. I don't see it happening because, you know, everybody's kind of invested. I think it's more interesting to me is maybe this does fuel more discussions on the NCAA side of the shop in terms of how money has been distributed on that issue, because we saw it this past tournament, you know, with the men's and the women's, there was a lot of people bringing up the fact that, you know, you get NCAA units for your performance in the NCAA men's tournament, but you don't in the women's. Is that fair? Should that change? Should that be something that the NCAA is going to have to look at? And, you know, there's some crossover between some of these university leaders that are going to have to look at that, along with making decisions on the college football playoff. So maybe it's a move towards more equality on both the football side of the shop and the NCAA side of the shop. But maybe it's also the opposite, and where we can kind of see some consolidation on the football side versus more of a move towards equality on the NCAA side.
I mean, I could conceivably see a world where that happens even more at the G5 level. Because if you're in the Mountain West, there's probably a pretty compelling argument that if any value is being derived from the Mountain West to the college football playoff or that conversation, it's almost exclusively coming from two programs or two and a half programs and not the bottom part of that league. If you are in the American, well, Cincinnati and Houston and UCF has certainly added more value to the college football playoff conversation than ECU or Tulane. If you are a league that does not get a whole lot of this revenue anyway, and you're trying to make sure that you don't lose any conference members, maybe you'd look at distributing that revenue in a less equal fashion. I mean, this is exactly what the WCC does when they looked like they might lose Gonzaga. Well, they rearranged their schedule and they changed around their money. And now Gonzaga gets to keep more of those units because it's not like Portland is doing anything to earn them. And I don't necessarily think that the Big Ten or the SEC would go to that model in football, but I could see a world where maybe resource scarcity is a bigger issue where at the conference level, where maybe this pay for performance distribution model becomes a little bit more commonplace.
Yeah, I mean, the issue of how to distribute money from a lot of these media deals has been around for several decades now. I mean, this is a topic that comes up just about every time these deals are renegotiated. You go back to when the Pac-12 originally expanded and went to, you know, kind of their new model under Larry Scott. You know, I think it was a big deal that all television money was distributed equally, which wasn't the case beforehand. You know, there was certain issues with, you know, when you're getting on national TV and all that. And, you know, that was the same for a lot of the leagues. Still in a minor way, kind of what the Big 12 has done. You know, they went for the overall distribution being very equal, but you also get to keep some of those third tier rights, which obviously varies in terms of the value tremendously from Texas, which is getting that $15 million a year from ESPN for the Longhorn Network, and Oklahoma with their deal in Fox Sports, compared to what Kansas State is getting and Oklahoma State and some of the others. You know, that's a wide disparity in one way around it. And maybe that kind of model is something that kind of crops up again. But I think at the end of the day, these issues of equality and fairness and how are we going to distribute the money that is the lifeblood of the sport right now is going to be contentious. It's going to be something that is going to come up for debate in a lot of these boardrooms. And while you would hope that everybody says, yeah, this is an enterprise where we value fairness, that we're pursuing a bigger goal. At the same time, you know, they also talk to their athletic directors who know, hey, I still got to deal with paying a coach $7 million a year or paying a $15 million buyout. And I still have those pressures as well. You know, I still got, you know, pressures from boosters I want to be less reliant on so that I can actually run my department, you know, by myself with making my own decisions. And I think it's going to be a fascinating setup because I've said it before on the show, this is really entering a phase where the overall changes in college sports are as great as they're ever going to be. And I think you add on all that's happening on the NCAA level with what could potentially happen with the college football playoff. And it really is going to be really almost a different look to college athletics in 2025 versus it was in 2018, 2017, wherever you want to kind of start your point.
It would be kind of funny if by the time this deal actually ends up happening, that there's federal legislation that introduces some kind of cost controls for college athletics. And so now you get this windfall money and then the Alabamas and Ohio States of the world are limited in how they can actually spend it. And it ends up just being a gigantic revenue transfer for the poor to the extent that the poor exist in this system. Is that likely? I wouldn't bet on it, but I would also don't think that that possibility is zero. That's also something that some athletic directors increasingly have expressed interest in, whereas 3 years ago, that idea would have been completely DOA. I think to kind of put a bow on this, the important thing to take away here, we can sit here and as put on our fan cap, and we can go back and look at the last decade, and we can try to suss out whether 6 or 8 or 12 or 16 would be best, knowing that there's some logistical considerations and the fact that we're potentially asking unpaid athletes to play NFL regular season length seasons is kind of ridiculous. They're going to start getting some money relatively soon. But the changes that are going to come from this aren't just for the AP top 15 level programs that are now going to get in the playoff that weren't able to get into it before. It's going to change who moves up to FBS, who decides to stay in FCS, what kind of G5 conference they're going to be in, and what kind of revenue and what kind of department priorities a lot of these other smaller leagues get will have in the coming decade. I think, Brian, that you're right. We would look at however this new deal ends up shaking out as being as transformational as the original playoff was and the creation of the original BCS, I think, in terms of like a line of demarcation in different eras in college athletics, because how this will change conference alignment, recruiting, scheduling, would be very significant after this becomes solidified.
And it's also coming at a time where a lot of these presidents, let's face it, they're dealing with a lot bigger issues with regards to their universities for their budgets, and especially in terms of transfers from the state and how much support they're getting from state legislature. You know, higher ed itself is going through a revolution as well, kind of parallel along with this. And I think that's also important to keep in mind when you're dealing with these college presidents who say, yeah, as much as we want to share the wealth, you know, I also need to fund my athletic department. And I also got to do it with less money that I can give to that athletic department, whether it's through student fees or whatnot, because my either either my enrollment is shrinking, I'm having financial difficulties in terms of the underlying issues with my university. And we're also entering a phase where, let's face it, there's a drumbeat that continues to happen with regards to how college is going to operate in the United States going forward. Whether, you know, maybe you can go to college for free. How is that going to change these state universities versus these private institutions? You know, private schools are really a backbone, whether you're talking about the USCs of the world. Certainly, you know, you have Vanderbilt and the SEC. You have these private institutions who are dealing with a lot different issues than some of their public peer institutions are. And so I think that's another factor to keep in mind is this: everybody's got a lot on their plate right now. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate that alongside this, because as much as they want to say that athletics is only a certain part of their time, if you're a college president, you're spending an increasing amount of it on dealing with athletic issues, but you also have some more pressing issues because you're running a $2 billion university that needs some funding from somewhere, and it's not going to come necessarily from athletics.
Yeah, if you wanted a good example of what this looks like in real time, and I've written about it a couple of times on Extra Points, and I will likely do it again this week, would be the situation at Hartford, where you had — that's not an FBS institution, it's not a football institution at all, but that's a private school. It's not a Vanderbilt, it's not a USC or an SMU or a super academically elite institution. It is a Division I school, and one that's facing very significant financial pressures from enrollment challenges and looking at potentially dropping to Division III. And then there's a big political pushback from that. And we can, you know, we'll talk about the dueling reports and what they should do. But I can tell you, you know, there's six other Hartfords out there, and their studies just haven't been made public. There's what you're seeing there is true for almost every other school in the MAAC. It's true for a lot of other smaller private schools in the Midwest and in the South. And it all kind of trickles up, because when the Hartfords start having problems, then the Central Connecticut States start having some problems, and then the UConns start having problems. And they're different problems, but they're still problems. And the problems that we're going to talk about on this podcast and on Extra Points, which you can find at www.extrapointsmb.com. Brian, where can folks find you on the internet? I understand you're an extremely busy guy these days.
It is. It is draft week, so a lot of draft content for Athlon Sports, both online on athlonsports.com and through the magazine later in the year as we get those previews editions, especially on the college front and the NFL front cranked out. But busy time. It's usually does not kind of sneaks up on you a little bit, but we are pumping out a lot of content, and a lot of it you can find on my Twitter page at Brian D. Fisher. That's usually the best way to not only find me and all of my takes on various things from European soccer to the college football playoff expansion, but as well as the NFL draft.
The NFL, it does kind of hit you in a weird part of the sports calendar, because if you're in college athletics, generally right after the end of the men's NCAA basketball tournament, there's just this big collective sigh of relief because, okay, recruiting is slowing down now for a little bit. I've been kind of going pedal to metal for the last 6 months. You can chill, but then it's just a couple of weeks later, it's draft time. And you don't really hit the real summer doldrums until after that draft, unless you're me, when you don't really follow the NFL anymore because you grew up in Ohio. And until like last year, those teams basically were so terrible, we just pretended they didn't exist. You can continue to find this podcast wherever you find podcasts, whether that's Apple or Spotify or Amazon. You can now also play these podcasts a little bit easier right there in the browser on extrapointsmb.com. You can just click that little arrow button at the top of the post. You can play the whole thing right there. That'd be lovely. If you do enjoy the show, please share it with your friends, share it with your internet friends, share it on twitter.com, share it by clicking the 5-star or the 4-star button and writing nice things in the review box. That helps more people find it, which helps bring more people to Extra Points, which brings more money in for all of us, which keeps this entire thing operating. We have some really, I think, unique guests scheduled for the next couple of weeks and some really kind of off the beaten path podcast episodes that I'm excited to share with you. We'll get into that soon. In the meantime, I'm Matt. That's Brian. Thanks for listening. We'll catch up with you next week.